Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey everybody, it's Angela, and I'm here today with John and Jim, and we are bringing you our 50th episode. It is really hard to believe that we're at this point. This all began as a passion project because we were looking for a children's law podcast and there wasn't one. And it's just grown into a really great community of people, and we love hearing from all of you. I think we've also learned that there really is a need for the practical strategies that we're bringing to you guys. So we are looking forward to continuing this and are just having a great time. So we appreciate all of you that have been listening since the beginning.
It is hard to believe it's been 50 episodes, really. I mean, a lot's gone on in those years. We've learned how to do this through COVID and everything else. I mean, the world's changed a lot, but it's been really great experience, really sharing some of these strategies with people and building this little community.
And it's been great getting to know children's lawyers across the nation that we never would have otherwise met. And then to hear stories from them, to get feedback from them about how, you know, just some things that we've said, that we've shared with them has really helped the kids they represent and helped them in their practice and made their lives a little easier and made their jobs a little easier. That's been really rewarding. And also just getting the feedback and learning about what's going on in other parts of the country in our field has been valuable for us too, right? Because until we started the podcast, there were whole huge areas of this country that we were totally not plugged into. You know, now I feel just a little bit more connected through this. So it's been awesome.
In thinking about the 50th episode, we felt a little bit of pressure. We're like, well, what do we do? So we decided we would boil down some of our main teachings into three strategies for you today. And it's going to be three strategies that, when practiced with fidelity, can move the needle in your practice. So before we get into the strategies, I just want to talk a little bit about what we mean when we say practice with fidelity.
Yeah, we started our office years ago, and we wanted our office and our practice to have a certain structure to it. And so there are things that we do on our cases every day, on every case, in every circumstance. This is where we pivot on the case. And it's so we didn't really know that this was basically implementing a program that practiced with fidelity. And it's been really helpful to us just seeing how the macro approach of doing certain things on every case then really impacts on the micro level, that individual client, because you didn't have to think to do it. It's just something, it's a good best practice that you do on every case.
What we wanted to do for you today is boil it down to some really basic, simple steps that you can take in every single case. And we believe that if you do this, it will move the needle in your practice and help your clients. And the first of those strategies is to know where you're going and know the very next step to move your case forward.
And we always start with the child, right? So if you've got a drug case and you've got a young mom who is struggling with addiction and she's living with a boyfriend and there's a grandmother out of state who would like placement, and there's a father somewhere in prison and we don't know for how long or for what right now. You've got to look at your little 18-month-old client or 6-month-old client and say, okay, you got a lot going on. There's a lot of disparate elements flying around this case, but you were just taken from mom. Mom is our goal. That's my goal. What's my strategy to get you there? And what are my obstacles to reaching that goal? Is dad a potential obstacle or is he a potential asset? Maybe dad has a mother or a sister in town that I could use as a placement. Or maybe dad's prison sentence could be a real potential problem if mom doesn't get her stuff together in time. Or maybe dad's going to be out of prison and he's a secondary option if I can't reunify with mom, if she can't overcome the addiction. Boyfriend, what's his story? Oh, he's a drug dealer. He's supplying mom her drugs. What am I going to do about that relationship? How am I going to see if it looks like mom's going to have to separate? Is she willing to do that? Is she not willing to do that? grandma out of state. Great. But I don't want, I need mom to be able to visit my client. So grandma, I can't really let my client go to grandma. Everyone else might be thinking, oh, great, we can get a kid out of foster care and give him to grandma. But I want mom to see my client 3 times a week so that she feels like she has a bond there and it helps her in her recovery. So you've got to lasso all these different things together and make them and bring them into your strategy and make them conform to what your will is on this case. And you have to control the narrative and you have to control the direction now for your little client who you're foreseeing as, okay, when you're 22, you want this to have been your only trip into the foster care system, your only step where you stepped into the child welfare system for a little while, but your mom got better, you got back with mom, and everything went well from there. So that's the client that we're trying to represent.
And that's a good way to think about it. When these kids are young adults and they look back at their story, the story doesn't have to be total chaos if some of this work is done by their lawyers. It seems kind of basic what we're talking about here. Know where you're going and know what the next step you have to take is. But if you do this consciously, it really does, it really brings it into focus for you and really makes a difference. It shifts your practice from being reactive to being more proactive. And it is real easy to just turn into a cork on the ocean where we are completely at the whims of the parents' activities. It's, you know, you see it happen on a case where everyone's gung-ho for reunification. Well, if you form your direction and your strategy at the outset, you can't let every little bend or little bump in the road take you off of it. You know immediately that you have a goal for your client. And if these parents are relapsing or having difficulties, you don't just shift necessarily on their whims. You're making conscious decisions on behalf of your client and you're being more proactive in it. So if mom relapses, you're on top of that instead of sitting there watching it and seeing, well, let's see if she fails. Let me give her enough rope here and let her sit out of treatment for 2 or 3 months because I happen to know that no one's going to re-refer her. Everyone's over her. So I'm just going to watch, I guess, because she relapsed. She made the choice and she's choosing the direction of the case, right? Wrong. It's your client. It's your client's case. You have to choose the direction of this case. And if you want to fight for this, then you fight to get mom back in treatment ASAP. And so that's kind of what we're talking about. And obviously the day-to-day strategy becomes very fluid with these activities of the parents. And that's where your skill set is going to be called into question. I'm not a gamer, but it is a lot like a video game where little barriers are just popping up along the way that you have to deal with. And that's just what you have to be prepared for in our practice. Everyone listening probably knows that. There's a different barrier coming up maybe every other week on these cases. And that's why it's good to be in that mindset of seeing them as a barrier that needs to be knocked down or taken out, or you need to remove it or get around it, whatever the case may be. But you have to be ready to think on your feet and deal with it in the present and not let it just rise up in front of you and say, well, I guess that's not my goal anymore.
I think that's such an important point that's worth repeating as we don't wait for parents to fail. If the goal is reunification, expect barriers and, you know, you'll know the most important issue in the case and you need to know what your very next step is. Maybe it's the barrier that just popped up. And one of the ways to keep your cases going is to always know your next step's not typically going to be waiting unless everything is going smoothly in the parents in treatment and the example that we're talking about. So know that very next step and do what you need to do to move it forward. We're going to move on to our second strategy, and this one is really simple and quick, and it's just measure what matters. Now, we believe at True North that if you're going to measure one thing, it needs to be time to permanency, and there's a lot of reasons for that that you all know, but if you can only do one, do that. It's the measure what matters example really is often used in the business world and setting targets and goals and things like that. For us, it's really different. I think what we find is that if you are always on top of how long a client's been in care, you're going to be surprised at how fast the time goes. We do some consulting work and in reviews, you know, it's almost always this, wow, I can't believe it's been 6 months. I can't believe it's been a year. It's that keeping your eye on it that keeps you motivated and make sure that you don't find yourself just showing up at the hearing and addressing issues the day before.
Yeah, you have to remember, right, that child's sense of time is so, so different from ours, right? I mean, we're coming to the end of another year. And it's like, what happened to this year? Forget about that. What happened to the year before? I don't remember. I couldn't tell you. But for kids, try to go back to when you were a kid and try to remember when you knew that, like, oh, Halloween is not coming until October. Gosh, and it's only August. It's so far away. But for us, right, it's like, oh my gosh, why are they putting Halloween decorations up already? What is wrong with these stores, right? So it's like, you've got to keep that in mind though. And that's what helps with the writing it down somewhere, right? Like writing it on the front of your file or keeping a spreadsheet that you take out when you go to review your cases. Every time you decide to have a team meeting or just your own solo case review or however you review your work from time to time, I always like to start with, this kid came into the system on this date. And if you have a counter going for yourself, it's even better. It's like, oh, we're on day 220. And what I like about, there's a couple things I like about that. I'm on day 220. And then I look at my next case and it might be on day 546. And then my next case might only be on day 75. But then you start to get this context for which cases are really out of whack, right, within your system. Like, I'm on day 220 and we haven't approved a case plan for mom yet, or, you know, we haven't gotten her into treatment yet. We're already on past day 200. That's all very helpful in terms of just measuring the most important thing. And this doesn't mean that we want to rush towards any particular outcome other than safely getting out of foster care, right? I mean, preferably we're getting everyone home to their parents, but if we're not, then at least we're getting them out of foster care in a reasonable amount of time. Because we do have to remember that it's a long time for kids, right? It's a large percentage of their life if they spend a year in foster care.
Yeah, and I think just from a, you know, individual lawyer perspective, giving yourself something to measure is also about personal accountability. And have I done anything on this case that's at 532 days? What is the kind of drives you back and can set some priorities? A lot of you have a lot of children. And so ideally you use these numbers to keep them on track, but occasionally, you know, they're going to get off track. And this makes sure that you're not truly surprised when you open your file at any given time. So we want to move to our third strategy, and this one is one we've talked about in an episode that I would recommend, that where we talk about landmines on Permanency Road. There are a lot of those, but there's one that so often derails cases in the most painful way. And so our strategy number three is don't forget dad.
Yes, every child has a father. And sometimes it takes multiple attempts and multiple paternity tests and multiple names to find that father. But it is so important that you do. And we all know this, right, anecdotally. You kind of know it's important. But in our jurisdiction, we did an unpublished study on our cases in the courthouse to see, you know, what's keeping kids in care longer. And so they just said anyone in care more than 2 years is called a long stayer, right? And so they looked at the long stayers over 2 years versus the kids who got out in under 2 years. And the correlation between cases that had missing fathers at the beginning, or where they didn't nail down paternity and get that father wrapped up in court early on, and the kids who stayed in foster care for two or more years, was stunning. Even though we all knew that would be a correlation, the numbers were stunning. And this is not maybe not the most scientific study, but it was still a good sample size, and it resonated with all of us. I think it resonates with our listeners too. You know that on those cases, anyone who's been practicing for a while, and this is important for new attorneys to know this going in to the practice, there will be cases where you and the four other attorneys on the case and the judge will all forget about dad. That's why this is one of our strategies, because this is just a thing that goes on in our field, unfortunately. We all focus so much on mom, and then it only takes one or two little litigation wrinkles, right? And pretty soon, no one is talking about dad, a paternity. We have a name on a petition. Nobody's found him. What happens is when the case needs to wrap up in anything other than reunification with mom, now you got to find dad. And bringing him into the case later, you're not doing it concurrently. You got to do it concurrently, or else it really does impact the kids' stay in foster care.
Yeah, and what you'll find in different jurisdictions, I'm imagining, is different approaches to this. We here used to be awful at it, like not even hardly naming them on the petitions, or when we did, that was the extent of it. I'm suspecting that out there, the common problem is probably the one we have, in that there is like a naming of the father, a pursuit of the father, and then a trailing off of the efforts. And so if you ask about a father, you'll hear that, oh yeah, dad is in North Carolina, he's out of the picture. Did they serve him? Well, let me check. They tried to serve him. Service was sent out. Was there a return of service? You can see it can drag on. The process can drag on for months, like John was saying. So this it takes some dedication to track it down, and track it down fairly quickly. If you can't do it yourself, to get the agency to do their job and make sure they're doing it, and keep it coming back into court on status checks, keep it before the court until it's resolved. That's probably the only sure way to get this done, is to keep it before the court, because it's a simple due process issue that the court has to address. Because, you know, it's not just the dad coming forward. It's all of dad's relatives coming forward in month 10 or 11 of the case. And so keep that in mind, because forget about your placement plans, because those may go out the window if paternal family is just finding out about a grandson or a granddaughter, you know, a year later. So keep all that in mind when you're pursuing these dads, because it's so important and it can really set your case sideways.
Not to mention that if you forget about it, it violates the first placement, last placement strategy, because if dad has relatives that can take the child from day one, how much better for the child than going into foster care? So it is, it does trail off, kind of taking it back to our measure what matters concept. You don't need to have anything specific to keep track of this, but maybe it's a checkbox on your file for each child until you know for sure that dad has been served, dad is involved, until it's resolved. Because, you know, one of the other things that happens is sometimes the mom doesn't want to give that information. And so you might have to keep asking. You might have to ask later. And if mom realizes, you know what, I might not get this kid back. Now I want them to know dad. You know, you can't let it trail off. It has to stay top of mind. So it's kind of a question that you ask until it's answered.
Yeah, it's to tie it back to what we were saying earlier. It's one of those strategies that when your client is a young adult and they look back at their story, it makes more sense to them. I was removed from my mother. I was placed with my paternal grandmother and raised by here, or I was moved to my father. They did a interstate home study on my father, and I moved to North Carolina to be with my father. Instead of a story that reads, I was removed from my mother. I spent 18 months in foster care with these foster parents who I kind of remember. I have good memories of that place. And then I was moved to my paternal paternal grandmother in North Carolina, and I was raised by her. The story doesn't have to have those breaks in it if we can do some of these things with fidelity. They're not that complicated. It's just a lot to keep track of. There's a lot of little things to keep track of.
Exactly. So that's our three strategies. I'll repeat them for you in case you're driving. Number one, know where you're going and the very next step to move your case forward. Number two, measure what matters. And to us, that is time to permanency. And number three, don't forget dad.
And thank you all for listening. It has been so great bringing you these last 50 episodes. We're looking forward to the next 50. We wouldn't be here without all of our listeners, all our loyal listeners. And we hope you'll share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. And also, please visit our website if you haven't done so, and subscribe, because we promise not to spam you, but you do get an email notification then when we send out a new episode. And we also plan to be sending out more useful strategies and tips in the near future. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.